Hi, guys. Good morning.
Did you enjoy sleeping in yesterday and not talking to us?
Yeah. You know, I Stacy gave me the choice, so I said Tuesday because we got in pretty late, and my son was up early, so I got about 30 minutes sleep.
And here's an odd question for you right off the top. Do you think you have a lot in common with your head coach, Bill Belichick?
Do I have a lot in common?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say a lot in common. I would say there's certainly plenty of things in common, but not a lot.
Yeah. Well, the one thing is, I'm just guessing here from a distance, you both seem like much better people to be around when you're winning as opposed to losing.
I would attest to that. My wife said that when we were in bed last night. She said, God, you're so much more friendly when you win.
Well.
And I started laughing. I mean, it's true. Well, you know what? We all as players put a lot into each week. And it tell you, when you lose, when you flunk that test at the end of the week, knowing what you put into it, you know, it's all for nothing. So it's you're right. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I'm glad we win a lot more than we lose, or else that'd be one miserable, you know.
So you bring it home with you?
Oh, yeah. How could you not? I mean, when you bring it home, I mean, believe me, my wife's watching the games, and she's got questions about the games and what we're doing. So, you know, even if I wanted to forget it, she'd bring it up.
Is it easier to sleep after a game like the Pittsburgh game or the Cleveland game, or is it hopeless in either count because you got the adrenaline going?
Yeah, I think it's that. It's, you know, I've never really slept well after games. I don't think many football players do. It's just you get so riled up from the game. There's just so many emotions. Usually the next night, like last night, was much better nights. I was in bed at 7:45 last night, so that's like, you know, it's nice to be able to do that. To try to catch up on some rest that you don't get on the game days.
Well, speaking of riled up, and I'm sure, I don't know if you've seen it, but you've heard about it. The camera had you on the sideline, actually coming to the sideline, just sort of screaming at everybody and then sitting on the bench talking, and we couldn't figure out exactly what you were saying. We actually contacted a school that has a deaf studies program to read your lips, Tom. Now, I'm going to run by you what the deaf studies people told us you said, with the caveat that only about 70% accuracy based on television and not standing directly in front of you.
Oh, my God.
You ready?
Okay, yep.
They said, you said on a number of occasions, keep going, keep going, keep pushing, never, ever break. Is that accurate?
It doesn't sound like me.
No?
No. I mean, I don't know what. I don't know. I don't remember exactly what I was saying. So maybe I did say some of those things, but
yeah.
I don't remember.
You calling these deaf kids liars? Is that what you're doing?
Now, they also said, it looked like you said, they can be 100% sure, the word suicide. Did you say suicide?
No, I was threatening to kill everybody.
Oh.
Homicide.
Okay. And then they also said on a number of occasions the word bleeping a-holes happened to be mentioned.
I'm sure, yeah, maybe not together those words.
Yeah.
Those were said.
I don't think you have
too.
To be an expert
lip
reader to figure that one out.
Tom, what were we watching there? What was that?
Well, you know, I mean, it's I said after the game, it's so emotional, and I think we're all putting a lot into it, and, you know, just what our level of concentration needs to be on a down-by-down basis. Sometimes we do it better than others, and that's including myself. And I think a lot of the times when I get, you know, really emotional, fired up, it helps me get going as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I just know that when I try to put a lot of pressure on everybody else, in turn it puts a lot of pressure on myself to really get going and get the team going and get the ball moving and get the ball in the end zone. So, you know, I know there's times where I'm out there where I'm maybe not as excited, and I really, you know, it's not that you're excited to play the game, but, you know, I know that sometimes I'm really focused when I'm really into it and really intense, and that's just the way I want to play.
Would you say the tone of those comments to your teammates was encouraging or chastising?
No, they know me very well. So, I mean, my emotions go up and down, and so do theirs. And, you know, they say things back to me, and I want them to know, and they do know that, you know, it's all in the best interest of us trying to accomplish our goals each week. And it's not, there's nothing personal out there toward anybody. And there's plenty of times where they want to scream at me. You know, but, and that's just that, you know, I don't think you're going to have a good football team if everyone's in a happy mood all the time. And I think there's guys that are very edgy, and we have plenty of those guys on our team, especially our coach. And our coach is. Our offensive coaches are the same way. So we're just trying to win the game. And I think that's, you know, keeping your emotions in check. There's a time for that. There's also a time for, you know, really getting fired up for the game and fired up throughout the game and playing with the – with certainly a high level of concentration and focus.
You know, most athletes, most people, don't get better when they get emotional or get angry, whether you're playing golf or pick up basketball or, you know, throwing a football around. When you get that heightened state of emotion or anger, it affects you negatively. But it seems like you're one of those guys, maybe Tiger Woods would be one that, or John McEnroe is the best example. He'd get angry and he'd get better. Do you yeah. feel that yourself? Do you, when your emotions are kind of, you know, off into that into
running
that,
hot,
that red zone, yeah. do you feel like you're playing okay, or do you feel like it affects your game, your accuracy, maybe your decision making at all?
No, I you know, it's interesting. That's probably why I suck at golf, because I you know I can't get emotional like that. You're playing golf. I do feel like when I'm, you know, really into it like that, that I am, you know, hyper focused, and it's hard to get on the other players when you're not playing well. You know, I always feel that. So if I'm not playing well, I tend to be a little bit more reserved, which I don't want to be that way. I want to keep the pressure on us and keep us focused and keep us going. And you're right. I just feel like that's when, you know, I feel like I'm focusing my best. Not that everything's perfect out there. It never is in a football game, but to really be that much into it, I mean, I think that helps me out. I don't know about other people.
Well, we know you don't suck at golf, and we know you didn't suck at baseball.
I do suck.
You're like a 10 handicap, right?
Yeah.
In our world, that's not sucking. And we know you were a damn good baseball player, and we've talked to baseball players about this before. They get taught at an early age you can't be emotional. You see kids in high school, they get emotional, but once you get past that, you got to keep your emotions in check if you're going to succeed at that game. Did anyone ever tell you while playing quarterback that you got to remain calm? You got to be, you know, like your idol, Joe Montana, more like Joe Montana than like, say, Dan Marino.
Yeah. I don't think that's ever been really taught or thought about. I had a pretty bad temper when I was a kid. I think that's, and having a bad temper is one thing, but, you know, being fired up and energized and emotional, that's another thing. So, you know, we got a lot of guys like that. Kevin Falk's a very fired up type of emotional player. So is Wes. I mean, that's how Wes plays the best to me. When Wes is really fired up and into it, there's nobody better than Wes. And, you know, sometimes when he's more quiet and reserved, it's because he's thinking about, you know, I wish I would have done this better, and I wish I'd have done this better, because that's just the kind of person he is. But I know when he's really fired up, he's playing with his most confidence. So that's just an example of another player. Rodney Harrison was the same way. That's Rodney played in Junior Seau. I mean, some great role models that I've had, guys that, you know, I really look up to. Teddy was the same way. So those are guys that I always looked at and said, okay, well, that's more of along the lines of how I feel I need to approach it.
Tom, talking about success rates and failure rates, your career passing completion percentage is about 63 or 64%. Your winning percentage is higher than that. The old cliche is good baseball players only hit 300, meaning they fail 7 out of 10 times. Could you have dealt with the failure of 70% failure rate as a baseball player as opposed to a quarterback in the NFL?
No, I couldn't have. And then, it's so hard to hit a baseball consistently like those guys do. But baseball was never going to be in the cards for me. I mean, I got drafted. I was a decent hitter, and I had a good arm, and, you know, I loved catching and probably the leadership role of that. But I was never going to be a pro. I mean, I don't think I'd ever been a pro baseball player. My knees hurt too much, and my elbow hurt too much. I didn't know how those guys could keep doing it. So I thought football was such more of a team sport. And when you had the teammates that I have and the coaches that I have playing for an organization like I do, I mean, I'm so lucky. I mean, I said to Wes the other day, I said, can you believe we get, you know, paid to do this? I mean, it's just, we have so much fun out there, and it's much more fun when we win. And there's a lot of things that come along with doing it in terms of the preparation it takes and the commitment year round that it takes to be you know, professional football player that, you know, a lot of my, you know, that we're all committed to. But, you know, to play football is pretty pretty unbelievable, especially in a town like this.
All right, that completes our general discussion of life as a professional athlete. I want to get specific about the game Sunday night. To begin with, and let's go chronologically, on the first touchdown pass to Gronkowski, do you know, Tom, how small the window to fit that ball is before you throw it, during the throw, or only after the ball is off your hands and toward the receiver?
Well, you know, we've run that route a lot with Rob, and I mean, he's such a big guy. I mean, he's tall with long arms and big. He's got huge hands. So a term we use is his catch radius.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a huge catch radius. So, you know, I know when I see the little guy, I can see his, you know, I can see him starting to break open, and I threw it and just tried to make a good throw. And he made a great catch in traffic. I mean, there was someone behind him. There was a guy in front of him. And, you know, that's an incredible catch. I mean, we say that all the time. You know, you've got to go out and make plays. And sure, you can go out there not to lose and not turn it over. That's important. But ultimately, it's got to come down to guys making plays. And we were making plays the other night, and I thought that was Brandon Tate made a hell of a catch on a post. And Algie Crumpler, the second play of the game, didn't seem like a lot because, you know, we gained, you know, 7 yards on first down. And then I threw it to Algie on second down, who made almost a one-handed catch for a first down. Well, you know, if he drops that ball, then now it's third and three, mm-hmm. and now you got to convert a third down to keep the drive going. Well, Algie makes a hell of a catch, you know, and then the whole drive, you just get going from there. And then once you score in the first drive of the game, you're thinking, man, we got a lot of we just went right down the field, man. This is, you know, the crowd was going crazy and the energy of the first series of the game. And then, wow, we're in the end zone. Man, this is the way this game's going to go tonight. And it's pretty telling, you know, as opposed to three and out, you punt the ball, you're like, damn, you know, you can never really get started. So, you know, guys made some huge plays. Wes made huge plays. Dion did. You know, Benny ran the ball great. So,
And the line hardly protected you at all.
They were unbelievable.
Have you ever got touched, hit less than you did Sunday night, particularly against a good defensive front?
Yeah, it was a great front, and you know, our guys always step up to the challenge. And you know, you got Harrison and Woodley, you know, you got some good guys inside in a team that loves the pressure, and our guys really stepped up to the challenge. And you know, Light and Sebastian, and then you know, Logan's added so much to our offense. So you know, he thought he was a bad luck charm there in Cleveland, but you know, he's really come in and been exceptional. So, you know, he's everything that you want in a football player, and I certainly hope he's here for a long time. But, you know, those guys really, they fight week in, week out.
Speaking of your offensive line, Logan in particular, he peeled the Steelers off of you time and time again. After your touchdown, I guess you were locked up with Paul Amalo. Matt Light says Pittsburgh was taking shots at you after your 3-yard sneak for the touchdown. Quote, there was a lot of extra sugar being tossed out around there late in the plays. The guy would be down on the ground, and you'd see unnecessary stuff happening, like they're torquing Tom's head when the play is clearly over. Those are the kind of things that get you fired up. I assume you noticed all those things happening.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I didn't notice that at all. You know, I just, you know, I'm not paying attention to that much. When the play's over, I'm usually looking at the sideline for the next play. So I don't know what the over-under on the fight that Logan was involved in the other night, but you know, we were kind of laughing at on the bus after the game. You know, Logan's always been one to mix it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's just two teams that have a great history together, and they play hard, and we play hard, and you know, Matt and those guys are always sticking up for me. So, you know, they played a hell of a game the other night before the whistle and after the whistle, as far as I'm concerned.
Have you ever considered the possibility of the potential of tearing a rotator cuff by spiking a football too hard? Because, you know, Bill'd be pissed.
I know. That was fun. I mean, I don't know the last time I scored. It's been a while. So I remember the Raider game in 2001 where I spiked and I fell on the ground. That was pretty funny. So, you know, I just love, you know, it's pretty cool, man. It's pretty cool to get in the end zone. You know, those running backs and receivers score a lot. So, They always got some plan. Dion's always got a dance planned or something like that. So at least I could do a spike the ball.
Do you have? Is that a planned thing? Do you know if you're going to score? You know what you're going to do with it?
No, I really don't. I don't think about it.
You don't have any dances planned? Anything like
any Icky shuffle?
I got nothing like that. You guys got to ask Dion what he did to put himself through college. That's why he's such a good dancer.
Oh, is he Chippendales guy? I think we might have
something
here.
We'll take that as a yes.
Hey, do you know going in? You said when the first drive worked and you marched down the field, you said we got something going on here. Did you know before the game, did you know Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, that you had something good planned, that you weren't going into the belly of the beast here to get your asses kicked on the road again, that this was going to be different than the Cleveland game? Did you know well in advance?
Well, I tell you, we always feel good about what we're doing. I'll tell you that. We felt good the Wednesday, Thursday, the Cleveland game. It's just a matter of execution. So, every time we put together a plan, we're thinking, okay, this is what's going to work. This is why we're doing it. This is what we're expecting to see. This is what we practiced. It worked out a hell of a lot better this week. So, Cleveland, that was obviously a game that things didn't go our way. The next week really had no bearing on what happened that week. So, looking forward to Indianapolis. The game in Pittsburgh's going to have no bearing on what we do against Indy. We got to have a great week of preparation, and we got to go out there and play well, because it's a damn good team that gives you very little margin for error. A team that's good in all phases of the game. So what we do know is that we need, to play our best week, because this team's been one of the best teams in the league for as long as I've been in the NFL. And that's the kind of game it's always been against the Colts.
Tom, this is a two-part procedural question. Number one, when you're looking at your wristband and studying it, should we assume that Billy has sent a number in through the helmet audio system, and then you're looking up that number on your wristband and then calling the play? Is that about right?
Yes.
And this is what struck me as odd. The longest look you had at the wristband, the play that you spent the most time looking, was just before your 3-yard touchdown run. It seemed to me that if he's calling your own number, you might know that one by heart.
Those things change quite a bit. So what happened with the wristbands is sometimes the play calls get pretty long. And sometimes it's faster to say 53 rather than, Z shift to, zero out Joker alert 68 Y hook D fast, So he says 53, and I look at 53, okay, and I find it and I read the call. So, I got a lot of other things to do rather than memorize the wristband.
Right. Was your quarterback sneak the play called, or did you go to the line and see something and said, I got a plan B that'll be better than the play we called?
No, we called that, and it was just something that we were on the 3-yard line, and we tried to, spread them out and take advantage of the look. So, I thought it was a great job to the awareness of, what was called. So.
And one more procedural thing. Do you have a hurry-up signal, a word or a phrase that gets the guy to the line of scrimmage when you think the opposing coach might be challenging something?
Yeah, we do, and we work on that quite a bit. We work on that in training camp a lot, and we kind of yell out the code word of what we're doing.
Right.
Because those challenges, those are important plays in the game. And when you get a gain for a first down, or you get a big gain, a significant gain, or a potential fumble or interception or something like that, on defense, you got to try to rush out there because, it takes a while for the network to kind of queue up the replay and the guys in the booth. And, if you only have two challenges a game and then the third, if you get it right, those are big plays. I mean, like the Jets against the Green Bay a few weeks ago, where they were all out of challenges on the Charles Woodson interception. They couldn't challenge because they already lost a challenge previously in the game. So, you can't really lose those challenges. So if we can go fast and force them into making a decision to challenge something that maybe they wouldn't want to challenge, and then, man, we win that. That's great. And then if we get the snap off, even better, because we handed it off on 1st and 10 and gained 5. So, looking at the play, it was definitely a catch anyway. But
right. All right, so you'll yell out a certain phrase or word. Maybe you say fire, nobody knows we're hurrying up to the line of scrimmage. How many plays are then available to you? Is there just one play you run in that deal, or are there two or three or four?
We have a couple
yeah.
based on what they're doing.
All right, Tom, since you went to bed at 7:45 last night, you missed, I assume, one of the great quarterback performances of all time, maybe even the greatest. Did you happen to get up and get online and see what Michael Vick did last night in Washington?
I did. I woke up, I saw the headline, and, you know, he's pretty amazing as an athlete. And I know I was watching a little bit of the pregame, and Steve Young said, you know, he's, you know, the greatest weapon at quarterback that, you know, that there could ever be. And I totally, you know, agree with that. I mean, with the way he can move the football and his style of play, and when he throws the ball like he did last night, I mean, they're damn near impossible to stop. So you got him covered, great. Well, then he runs for 20 yards.
Do you think the NFL can accommodate a guy who runs as much as he does? He doesn't slide, unlike most of you guys. He has not learned to slide or refuses to slide, and we saw him get crushed against Washington last time and get knocked out for a few weeks. I mean, it would be good for the NFL if a guy could play the way he played last night and last, but is it possible?
Well, that's the problem, and I think that's the give and take of being a, you know, quarterback who has incredible agility and ability to get out of the pocket. But, you know, when you see Brett Favre and you see Peyton Manning, got two guys who have played for longer than anybody else, and Brett takes a lot of hits. I mean, I think, you know, he's just one of the toughest guys to ever play the game, period. But Peyton, you know, you just know when to throw the ball away, and you know when to cut your losses, because when you're out of the pocket, to me, you don't see the things, for me at least, you know, things happen so fast when you're out of the pocket. And to make good decisions out of the pocket is really a learned skill. And, you know, when those guys are running to tackle you and Michael's able to make those guys miss, you know, that's great. And then you get hit because you don't see, you're looking at the guy coming on the left and then the guy on the right's coming, and then you don't even realize there's a guy behind you. And then, bam, you get smashed, and you're not able to protect yourself. Whereas when you're in the pocket, mm-hmm. you know, you can get a pretty good sense, and then you just go down or you throw the ball away, and then you play the next play. So,
plus, your teammates know where you are and the guys who are protecting you. I thought that Sunday night was a great example of that, Tom, where you stayed and threw from the pocket. Roethlisberger did not, and he got out, and obviously your teammates got to him because – he didn't stay in there. He likes to get out of the – I don't know if you heard of the statistic, but he threw more balls from outside the pocket than any quarterback has all year yeah. in your game Sunday night. And in the end, obviously, in the garbage time, he piled up some numbers. But I think, you know, your defensive front, the guys rushing him, were glad when they got him – when they pushed him out of the pocket.
Yeah, and a guy like Ben can take a lot of those hits because he's 245 pounds.
Right.
So even if he's getting hit by Mayo or you know, those guys typically weigh less than Roethlisberger, and so they fall on him, you know, no big deal. But a guy like Michael Vick, who probably, I mean, I don't know how much he weighs, but I couldn't be more than 205, 210 pounds.
Right.
I mean, the way he gets hit is unbelievable. I mean, I can see why. I said to somebody the other day, man, I was watching with Brian Hoyer yesterday, and I said, God, it's just, we're watching the Philly play the Colts, because we're watching the Colts defense. And I said, Michael must just be so sore on Mondays because he takes some hits that, I mean, there's no way I could ever take those hits. So, you know, he's just part of the price you pay when you're trying to gain those extra yards. It's a huge boost to your offense and what he's able to do. But, you know, you just got to sometimes weigh the risk-reward on that one.
All right, we have the list of that someone put together of the top 100 single-game quarterback performances, regular season, in the last 30 years, and this is profootballreference.com. We were wondering where Vic would rank. He's obviously, you know, it's too fresh, too new. So was your game Sunday, by the way. It didn't make the list either. But yep. There's only two Tom Brady's on here, and we were wondering if you would be able to guess which ones in the last, in your career. It's kind of a formula they put together, yards, touchdowns, the whole deal. And they adjust it for eras, so they get a few. You know, Joe Namath has the best single game performance ever.
When really?
he completed 15 passes for 496 yards.
Oh my God!
But do you know which of your two games would be considered the best single game performances ever in the regular season?
God, I don't know. There was a game against Buffalo Bills in '07 that we didn't punt.
That's true, but there's only one game from 07 on here, and it's not the Bills game.
The Washington Redskins game?
No, and that's not on here either.
I don't know.
Miami game, 21 for 25 for 354.
Okay.
Is that right?
What year? 07?
Yeah.
07.
Six touchdowns.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's underwhelmed.
Yeah. And then, I don't know if... And then
the game last year?
2009 against the Titans.
Yeah.
29 for 34. Were any drops in there, or were those bad throws, those five?
There may have been a few drops. You know, they're just looking at yards per attempt, I guess, then. So.
Yeah, 380 yards, six touchdowns there, too.
Yeah, that's. I mean, there's a big, you know, everyone loves yards per attempt. You know, that's obviously the biggest part of a quarterback rating. You know, if you're averaging 9 yards an attempt, I mean, it's pretty unbelievable. You know, it means you're getting the ball down the field when you throw it. You know, Ben Roethlisberger typically, you know, in the years I watch him, you know, some teams, you know, it's, you know, stats, you can make them any way you want. I mean, some teams, you know, that run the ball quite a bit and then play action pass, you're typically going to have more yards per attempt as opposed to teams that spread the ball out like the Saints. You know, us at times where, you know, you're using those short passing plays as running plays. So, you know, they're very deceiving. It just depends on the style of offense that you have. You know, certain games, you know, when you throw 25 times, it means you're running the ball a hell of a lot too. You know, you're not going to have, you know, you're not going to throw 50 times for 600 yards, you know, in a game. That's typically doesn't happen. You know, but, you know, there's plenty of games where you throw 20 to 25 attempts and throw for over 300 yards, and that's a hell of a day. I mean, it takes some big plays in the passing game. You know, in times where I've thrown for those yards, you know, you throw some slants and they go a long way. You throw some screen passes, they go a long way. You may hit, you know, some trick plays or stuff like that. But, you know, I'm never one to look into too many stats.
Tom, this was part of our discussion yesterday, so I'll ask you, what made your eyes bug out more Sunday night? Five sacks of Roethlisberger by the Patriots defense or the Patriots' ability to run the football against that Steelers defense?
Yeah, both were, I mean, both teams, you know, both those you know, those thoughts there, they, I mean, the Steelers, they're the best run defense in the league. So, you know, we went into the game thinking, yeah, we're going to run the ball, and, you know, when we run it, we got to run it well. But, I mean, we really ran the ball well. I mean, there were times where I handed off to Benny, and he bust through the line of scrimmage, and, I mean, he was making some great runs, running through arm tackles. Sometimes there was just pretty small creases, and he found them. So
he had to run through you on one play.
Yeah, he did. He did. That was the hardest hit I took all night, by the way. I had to run it like a friggin', you know, granite block that, you know, he ran into me. So, and then five sacks of Roethlisberger. I mean, nobody brings that guy down. He's just so big. But really, we had some, you know, looked like we had some good coverage on their receivers. I'm sure when they lost Hines early in the game, that's a big blow to their offense because, you know, what he means to that team and that offense. You know, he's the Troy Brown of the Steelers right there. So, you know, those are both great stats for us.
The foot injury didn't seem to be a problem. Was there no pain pushing off to throw?
You know, it's just, you know, you get the adrenaline going. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, just there's a lot of people dealing with stuff. There's every guy on our team's nicked up, so.
Hey, what do we need to know that you already know about the Colts defense?
Well, it's, you know, the difficult thing about them is that their style of defense, there's only one team in the league that plays it, it's them. So it's not like playing a 3-4 defense. I mean, it's by far the fastest, quickest defense in the league. You know, two of the most dynamic pass rushers in the game. You know, they do a lot of things well. And, they got some young guys on defense who are damn good players. And, you know, we got our work cut out for us. This is going to be a huge test for us. I'm glad we're finally playing these guys at home. We haven't played them at home in a while. You know, I'm sure the crowd will be rocking. So we'll really, you know, we got to put our best game together for 60 minutes and see what it turns out like.
As I'm sure you know, Vince continues to bark that you have no shot in the foot race. He says 40 yards is it. Are you okay with that? Because he said he doesn't need to be running any longer than 40 yards.
I don't. I'm surprised Vince said he could run 40 yards. I haven't seen that in a long time.
So,
you know, Vince is pretty good at that 10-yard takeoff. But I think my long strides can get him in the end. I'm ready for him. He's, you know, he's just backing down like Floyd Mayweather to Pacquiao.
Yeah,
what he's doing.
Yeah. So 40's okay with you?
I'm okay with 40.
Okay, good.
I'll
now,
take 40.
You've had a week to think about this. Actually, a week and a day. Something interesting about you that we don't know.
He owns part of the Under Armour company.
That's true.
Yeah, well, you guys know that. So,
yeah.
What would it be? I didn't think about it. I thought more about it. But how about a bad habit? A bad habit.
Yeah, like biting your nails or picking your nose,
sniffing glue, or
sniffing glue. No.
Biking without a helmet.
Oh yeah, biking.
Yeah, that's true. But we know that too.
Yeah.
Let's see. I love. There's two sports I love: surfing and boxing. And neither am I very good at, but I love to do it, and I suck at them both. So I'm trying to get better at both. You know, I've been watching boxing since my dad boxed, and he bought me a pair of boxing gloves when I was little. And we used to box, and I used to hang them up on my wall. I took a nail and hung the boxing gloves. So we would spar when I was little. And we stopped doing that once. You know, I pretended like I was hurt, and he came over to see if I was okay. And then I gave him an uppercut to the, you know, to the place where the sun don't shine. And he said, "Son, I think you and I are done with boxing."
Yeah.
So, you know, that's probably one of them.
Were you able to see the Pacquiao fight?
No.
Yeah.
You know, I was in bed, but I watched all the stuff. HBO does a pretty cool thing on that 24/7.
Right.
But to watch those guys train is so motivating, because what their level of commitment is, and when you see other guys preparing, because I know how we prepare, but you know, you don't often see how they prepare. But I mean, it's unbelievable, you know, those boxers and those MMA guys, and what they're willing to do, you know, to go get, you know, hit in the face for 12 rounds, and it's such a skill. You know, I love both those sports, and you know, probably because of the commitment and discipline that it takes, and that's what always is intriguing to me, especially like with martial arts as well. The discipline of that sport—it's not just something you can just, you know, you do for 2 hours a day and then that's it. I mean, it's a lifetime commitment, and that's probably why I appreciate it, because I know the commitment that, you know, I've always loved to make for my sport, and to see other people do it in other professions, even with surfers, you know, it's their life, and I know it seems pretty shallow at times to think about that, but it's just something you gain so much pleasure and enjoyment from, and you know, it's pretty cool to see from the outside.
Plus, the boxing thing makes Palomalo shoving your face into the turf not that bad, right?
I didn't even know he was doing that, to tell you the truth. I thought, you know, when you go in the pile, they, you know, you just think everyone's piling up. But, you know, Logan took offense to it. So if I'm going to get in a fight, not that I do that, you know, but Logan would be someone that I'd want right next to me. Logan just doesn't, you know, he doesn't care. He's going to kick somebody's ass.
All right, Tom, thanks for the conversation. We'll talk to you next week.